to UFO Party, an X-Files podcast. I'm Erin.
I'm Julia.
And today we are talking about Season 8, Episode 7, and it is Via Negativa.
Yeah, this episode gives me very strong Twin Peaks vibes.
Yeah, I thought it was really good.
Yeah, I really liked it.
I feel like the cinematography in this episode is really good. Like a lot of the shots are just like really amazing and high quality.
Yeah.
Definitely spooky, like eerie right off the rip. Like we definitely have some spooky vibes going on. But it's not anything that is, I feel like, overly gory or overly like scary.
Yeah, there were like
there's gore to blitz. But yeah, there's gore, but it's not as like gruesome and like in your face versus some of the other episodes that I feel like have come up lately where it's like, you know, there was a couple moments and we'll talk about it obviously as we get to them, but I feel like I personally in like horror movies and everything, if like a very gory scene is about to happen, I would rather them do the like cut right before it happens so that you're, as the viewer, like you know it's happening, but you don't necessarily have to watch it.
Yeah.
I would always pretty much prefer that because I'm not a gore person. And like, I feel like the only like one part of this episode that I was like, oh my God, I really like that's disgusting. They like thankfully cut it right before and it was like up to your imagination how that really looked.
Yeah.
Which I appreciated.
Yeah, I like gore, but when it's things are like just so over the top that you can't do anything else but laugh.
Yeah.
Like obviously hopefully people are not making like Saw level traps.
Right.
But the gore on Saw is so just
yeah, no.
Ridiculous that I enjoy it and I can tell, you know, when I
because it's
tell
almost
it's
like
makeup,
satire.
Yeah. And when I can tell it's makeup, I'm like, I can deconstruct it in my head and it doesn't bother me.
Sure.
But when it's just like so excessive and violent, that's when I'm like, okay, y'all gotta like fucking chill. This is not fun.
Yeah. No, I can definitely understand that. But yeah, I mean, we have a lot of, this is very much like a Doggett episode. We don't see a lot of Scully. We don't see a lot of like really anyone else except for Doggett solving this on his own. So that's different for us. And I thought that that was pretty cool. And yeah, we can just kind of get into it. But basically, overall vibes, we have two FBI agents, Stedman and Leeds, who are like casing out a house. Like they're watching this house where a cult is living. And they're looking at it because they believe that they are selling drugs or that they have drugs in the house.
Something to that extent.
But so they've been watching it like consistently, and one of the officers ends up falling asleep while they're watching because like really nothing's going on, and so the other guy goes and like goes to wake him up and he's like, what are you doing, like wake up. He's like, we need to go check it out because the door is just like wide open. So like, okay, like don't love that, but let's go. And they go to investigate and they end up like the door is wide open, all the lights are off, and they see bloody footprints going down the hall. So they follow it and end up finding all of the cult members dead. And like horrifically murdered too. Like it's not, you
this
know,
is a little gnarly.
They're not drinking Kool-Aid. Like they like were axed to death. Deep gash wound in basically like the forehead.
Yeah, like think Villisca axe murder light.
T- times like 20, what, 7 people or something like that are dead. Yeah.
But they weren't back like 30 times. It was just one or two, probably solid.
Boop. Yeah. I can't believe we've never gone, like, unrelated, but I can't believe we've never gone to the Lizzie Borden house together. So weird.
I've never been.
You've never been ever? Oh my god, that was like my favorite. We used to have to do field trips there all the time, which is like so weird in New England.
Cool. Yeah,
just, so cool. I haven't gone in years, but you can like stay there and stuff. That just
That's things I don't want to do.
I wouldn't want to stay overnight, but they do have like, you know, tours. I would do a tour. I don't believe like stuff like that. Like I don't really. It wouldn't bother me to be like in the house, I think. Because it's like realistically, like it's one girl that probably just went crazy, or who knows what was going on in that house that like caused her to snap. So like I don't really, it's not like a possession thing or anything like that. Like I'm not worried about it.
Yeah. I don't know how I would feel, because I know last time I went to Savannah, we went on a ghost tour. And we, like, went to a house that, like, a murder was done at or something. And Savannah's very spooky town anyways. And I, like, felt ill. I was like, I'll just wait on this side of the street. Everyone else can go look. I don't know what it is. I did not feel good about it.
Yeah, that's fair. So, and I can see it either way. But they have, like, a coffee shop now that's, like, near it. And it's not, like...
The amount of NPR stories that are about that fucking coffee shop.
Why?
Because there was, like, a whole lawsuit about it.
Oh, yeah, because they're, like, using her name and stuff, but they don't own the house. Yeah. Yeah, either way, we should do a little date in Fall River. Yeah.
I should do a date in Fall River, or we
should? No, we should meet. Okay. Okay. I mean, you can also, whatever, but...
I don't think that would go over very well.
But anyway, sidetrack. They are hit by an axe one time, not 30 times. We see a man appear who has an axe, and he has a third eye, literally.
Yeah.
And he ends up murdering both of the FBI agents.
It also looks very gnarly.
Yeah. The eye is probably the scariest part of this whole thing, because I will say, like, even when you're seeing the bodies and stuff like that, it's like a quick camera overview. Like, they're not, I don't know, like, you can't really see much. It's not like super scary. However, so this happens, and obviously, with it being two FBI agents, like Doggett and Scully are recommended to go on this case. And Scully calls Doggett and is like, I can't go. I'm sorry. Like, I have something personal going on and I can't talk about it. Like, I can't be there. So Doggett goes alone, and he basically like tells Skinner that Scully's going to be running late, which was cute. He's like, yep, she just, don't worry about it. We'll start without her, 'cause she's running late, even though she is not coming. And Skinner tells
him,
he's not
gonna spill her secret.
Right. He's so sweet. He's like a good friend. I like him.
He is. He's a good friend and a very good ex-boss.
Yeah.
Is he still their boss?
Technically? I don't know.
I think so? I don't know. Yeah. Okay, cool.
But Skinner tells Doggett about the cult and like obviously what happened with the victims and stuff. And the weird thing though is that one of the detective or one of the FBI agents leads, his body is actually found in his car, not in the house. Which this is where like Doggett is channeling like some like detective work. He's like John Grisham right now. He's like
true detectiving.
Yeah, for sure. Because he takes one look at it and he's like, this is not where this man died. And Skinner's like, the blood pattern says otherwise. And he's like, no, like literally it would be impossible for someone to axe him in the head at this angle. And it doesn't even make sense because there would be way more blood. So he like immediately is like, this is really suspicious. And obviously, as we know, the only person that survived this is the cult leader. So we're still waiting for him. And the other FBI agent is missing. So Stedman, his body is not found. We don't know where he is, but Stedman is missing and no one can find the cult leader, Anthony Tippett. Stedman, they find out that Stedman has like a house nearby, like a vacation home or something like that.
What a place to have a vacation
home. I know, right? In Pittsburgh. But yeah, he is, well, I don't know if they said that it was a vacation home, to be fair. He has a condo there, so maybe he does a lot of business in Pittsburgh. But they find him in his condo, which is locked from the inside, and he has a fatal blow to the head.
Yeah, which again, there'd be no fucking reason for that to be like the case.
Yeah, and also, like, there's no sign of forced entry or anything like that. Like, they don't know how someone would have gotten in and out into the locked condo. So
he just DIY'd it.
And then we pan to the cult leader, Tippett, and he is looking for a pharmacist because he needs this certain psychedelic drug.
Yeah.
And he ends up like trying to call someone in a phone booth, and then he goes out and a person on the street asks him for change or something, and he just attacks them and ends up like axing them to death. Yeah,
typical
Tippett. He's always doing that. No.
I was gonna say typical cult leader stuff, but also
And then we go back to Kirsch, and well, we go to Kirsch.
Skinner is not happy.
No, Skinner is basically just like briefing Kirsch on what's happened so far, and he basically says that the plant that Tippett has been using is a hallucinogen. What is it called? Something bark. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't remember.
I mean,
that's a word I'm not even going to
try. I was going to say I have the scientific name here. But T. ibaga. It is a real plant. And it does say the yellowish root or bark is used to produce hallucinations and near-death outcomes with some fatalities occurring. In high doses, ibogaine is considered to be toxic, and it is a controlled substance. So it does actually like make you trip, but it's like not one of the fun ones. So seems pretty terrifying, actually.
Yeah, perfect.
But he is using that because he believes that this is opening, obviously, his third eye, and bringing him closer to God. And his, like, cult beliefs and the practices that they have are somewhat of, like, a mix-up of, like, Eastern and Western philosophies, and like Christianity and Eastern religions, and they are calling this practice via negativa, in which they like believe that if they take this drug, they go down the negative pathway, and that somehow brings them closer to God, which I don't really understand.
Didn't they say it had something to do with their veins, or am I like making that up?
Yeah, I don't know if I followed this one.
Oh, interesting. Okay, I just looked it up and it said via negativa is essentially the study of what not to do. The idea comes from a Latin phrase used initially in Christian theology to explain what God is by focusing on what he isn't. So if God transcends all things, humans cannot apply qualities and attributes to him in the affirmative. Like, okay. God is light and God is love and stuff.
Okay. So, like, God is not darkness.
Yeah. I guess.
Well, what I would say is that I'm not, you know, probably the expert on this. However, I do not think that God is axing everyone in the freaking head. I think that's
only on Thursdays.
I think that might have been a misinterpretation.
Yeah.
They end up tracing the call that Tippett made before he killed that person, the one in the phone booth, and it leads them to a drug dealer named Andre, who is arrested and put, obviously, in a cell. And then Doggett has a vision of this man holding Scully's head severed,
and he's like,
in his hands.
He's like floating, right? Like, he's like that typical, like, meditation floating.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Cool.
So then Doggett realizes that his vision was just a bad dream. He wakes up. But the person that was arrested, Andre, he also is having a dream, and he ends up having a dream about being attacked by rats, which this was pretty, like, gross, actually.
Yeah. I didn't like this.
But they actually find his body, and it has been gnawed up and eaten by rats. And so that's disgusting.
I think, after Doggett had that interaction, because he was really upset with Skinner for, like, bringing up anything.
Yeah.
Like, not fact-based. But I think after this, he was like, okay. Like, it did open up, like, a third eye in a way.
Yeah.
For Doggett, which was interesting.
Yeah, I think he's having a hard time because he also is, like, kind of seeing things, and he's on edge, and he's just, like, starting to freak out, I think, about, like, what is reality. And Doggett goes back to his office, and he surprisingly gets there, and the lone gunmen are there. So he's like, Who are you people?
I forgot about that already.
And they are already doing, like, all this research, but they have been told by Scully to go there and look through files and, like, whatever.
I thought Skinner called them.
I think they said Scully.
Did Scully tell Skinner to contact Mulder's friends and then Skinner contacted them?
Maybe.
Because I think when it was decided that Scully wasn't going to come in because she's taking a personal day, which Doggett also gets very upset with, and then Doggett is upset that he's bringing up any alternative theories. He's like, okay, I just need to, like, get the alternative brains on the train. And that is. But also, it's kind of funny because Doggett already knows everything about them for the most part.
Yeah, he's like, oh yeah, Scully's told me all about you guys. And they believe that Tippett is able to, like, he's basically Nightmare on Elm Streeting it. He's entering people's dreams and projecting himself in there to kill them. And I think Doggett is maybe not quite at a place that he can accept that right now, but he is trying to be reasonable. They then, I'm pretty sure from there, go to the warehouse, right?
Yeah.
And this is where they found Andre, the drug dealer. So they go back there, and they end up meeting up with, I don't think they, like, intended to, but Tippett is there, and so they find him and kind of corner him and start talking to him, trying to figure out what is going on. And he is like, it's not going to stop. And like, I know what to do. And then he looks at Doggett and he is like, he understands, like he knows what I have to do to end this. And then he puts his fucking forehead through a table saw. And talking about saw, I mean, that.
Yeah. Which doesn't kill him.
Well, it probably would have, except that Skinner and mostly Doggett, like, pull him off of the saw. And so instead of dying, he just is.
He's in a coma.
He's in a coma, and his left and right side of his brain are severed. So he's not going to be waking up. Just, yeah.
I mean, did they touch on it that he basically chose that way because his third eye would have been here?
Yeah.
Since this is not a visual medium, I'm pointing to my forehead. Because that yeah. is such, oh, that's such a gnarly fucking way.
Yeah, go. Which is also like, I guess oh, where God. Like the axe thing comes, because they all got axed in the forehead. And
yes, you're so smart. I did not put that part together at all.
But yeah, I mean, it's like kind of sad, right? Because like they, I don't know, he just is suffering, obviously, and they bring him to the hospital, but ultimately Kirsch is the one that's like, we're done here. Like this can't continue. We're not working on this case anymore. And while they're at the hospital and figuring out how to get this man stable, who definitely is never going to be awake again, Doggett finds Scully's name on the register. And so he knows that she's there. And he goes yeah, and like peeks in at her, but he doesn't say anything.
She's in for acute abdominal pain, right?
Mm-hmm.
But he still doesn't know that she's pregnant.
Right.
So
he's like,
oh, a little baby.
She's probably having a cramp and she's just being a baby about it.
Well, I think that's when he starts realizing that she's not, obviously she's not taking a personal day off in the middle of a case for yeah. like any fun reason. So I think he definitely starts feeling like bad.
Yeah.
A little. I don't think he was trying to get mad at in the first place. I think he was just getting really frustrated.
Right.
But
which is not like he did anything wrong. He didn't say anything yeah. rude to her. He wasn't like mean.
Yeah.
And he, like I said, like he also like defended Scully in the beginning and was, or like not defended her, but like hid the fact that she wasn't coming in in order to like protect harsh, her. Right? Yeah. So he obviously, even if he was mad, he didn't like lash out or act on that. So
yeah, because they go to Kirsch from there, right?
Yeah, and Kirsch is like, we're done here. And Doggett being very well, like Doggett is very much like a, I feel like by the book, he's like a yeah. good agent. He's a good detective. He wants to follow through and make sure that like the answer that they got is the right one and that they have all of the information needed. And he's like, we can't end this right now. Like, we don't even have a murder weapon. Like, we don't have a confession. We don't have like any physical evidence that really truly ties this person to these murders. And Kirsch is like, I've seen enough. And I like, don't really care because I have a suspect and that's good enough for me.
Yeah. Yeah.
But both Doggett and Skinner don't agree with this and they are like rightfully upset and they feel like there is still a lot more work that needs to be done.
Yeah. Well, this is also the, cause we have to remember that Kirsch brought Doggett in.
Right.
So I think this is definitely the first time at least that we're seeing where he's like, this ain't adding up.
Yeah.
Like, there's a reason why Scully and Skinner don't like this dude.
Yeah. And then the next day, Doggett wakes up and he has a third eye in the middle of his forehead. Thankfully, it goes away. But he starts talking to Skinner and he's basically like, I'm freaked out. I'm scared that this man is gonna come after me. And Skinner is like, are you kidding? Like, that man has literally his brain chopped in half, so I don't think he's gonna be doing much. Doggett starts to like act really out of character. He is extremely paranoid, and he is freaking out that this person is going to enter his dreams and attack him, and he feels like there's no way that he can protect himself.
He also looks so sweaty in the face.
Yeah, he looks like a conspiracy theorist. Like, he's having a hard time.
Absolutely.
Skinner is not really having any of this, and he's like, you're tired, you just need to like get some rest and like just relax, because like you're not even making any sense right now. And he goes home, and he ends up having another hallucination where Tippett orders him to kill Scully, and then he like suddenly finds himself in front of Scully, and he decides instead to turn the axe on himself and kill himself in the dream, rather than hurt Scully. And because of this, I think because he chose to like do the right thing, he like wakes up, and he's in his bedroom. However,
Scully wakes him up.
Scully's like standing over his bed, and he is like, oh my god, like, thank you so much. Like, even though she has no idea what he's talking about, and she's like, I came here to let you know that Tippett died in his coma. So I think that hopefully was like the last attempt at Tippett controlling another person.
Yeah. I mean, it definitely doesn't seem to register with Doggett at all. Because he, like, keeps having, or I guess Scully keeps being, like, or having to remind him that he just had a dream. And, like, that's all it was. But obviously she hasn't fucking been here, so she doesn't know the craziness. Also probably good, because she would have, that's too much stress for her.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, it reminded me of Twin Peaks, because there was a section where they were, like, talking back. I think they did what Twin Peaks probably did and recorded them talking backwards and then forwarded it, if that makes any sense.
Like the Beatles album?
Sure.
Like
they're speaking in the correct words, but they sound real fucked up. Because it's like, it's the dream, and it's blue, and there's, I think in the Twin Peaks movie, there's a lot of blue light in there. And I'm just talking about this like you've seen it, and you're probably like, okay.
Like, I've never seen it. Do you have anything fun?
Kind of, yeah. I mean, this is Robert Patrick's favorite episode, apparently. And he found it very challenging. And then this is only the second X-Files episode to come with a viewer discretion because of graphic violence, and Home was the first.
Okay, yeah.
And again, I like, it's obviously graphic, but there's been way...
I was going to say, I feel like there's been way worse, for sure. Yeah,
but I think that's all I have.
Yeah. Overall, like, a lot of people really liked this episode. They felt like it was, like, the best episode that we've had since Mulder left, which I could agree with. I could see it. It's definitely a really good one, and it's definitely a chance for Doggett to become, like, a fully... fleshed out character.
Yeah.
Which I thought was really good.
Yeah, I mean, it's nice because we're only on what, episode 6?
Yeah. 7.
7. So I feel like it took a while for even our main characters. I mean, obviously, I guess that's kind of the point, but it's nice that we're getting a healthy, like, handful. Mm-hmm. Of background information and like kind of what makes him tick in like a relatively short amount of time.
Yeah.
Because he wasn't in the first episode, right, of the season?
I think he might have been. I don't really remember.
I think maybe at like the very end of it.
Okay. We ready for next week?
500 rats were used in the scene.
Ew.
So, season 8, episode 8, is called Sure Kill. where Doggett and Scully investigate two shady brothers who run, God damn it, who run a rat extermination business, one of whom may be a killer with X-ray vision.
Excuse me.
I don't remember this one.
Neither.
Okay,
More
interesting.
rats.
Yay. Oh my God, James Franco is in this.
Shut up. That's
As
amazing.
officer number two.
Wow.
I can't wait. Okay.
It's amazing.
Oh my God, I have to pee so badly.
Right. Well, I think we're good.
Yeah.
You can follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and you can subscribe
Check out
to
our
us.
free Patreon.
Check out our free Patreon and check out our merch.
Yeah.
And stay safe.
Stay spooky.
Bye.